This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, senior pastor of Cross Church in the state of Arkansas and the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention, sitting in today for my friend Tony Perkins, who leads this show each day. First up on the show today, we have a revised immigrant travel pause goes into effect on March the 16th. Today, President Trump signed a new executive order temporarily banning U.S. travel from six majority Muslim nations. Philip Holloway, who served as an officer and judge advocate in the United States Navy and former Georgia assistant district attorney and founder of the Holloway Law Group, will be with us in just a moment and discuss this new ban. And then Jennifer Breeden, legal expert with the Clarion Project, will join us to talk about the alleged wiretapping of Trump Tower during the presidential campaign. And then Family Research Council President Tony Perkins and regular host of the Washington Watch will join us to discuss today the Texas Senate hearings, laws that hinder, quote, common sense and public safety, unquote, when it comes to transgender persons being allowed to use both men's and women's restrooms. And then finally on the show today, Bishop Harry Jackson will be joining me from the state of Maryland, and we will join us in talking to spiritual leaders in America, pastors of churches, church leaders in America, trying to work through and come to some kind of understanding of how to coach our people, how to lead our people biblically and accurately through this very difficult time in this political and social upheaval in our country. Also, we're going to talk to Bishop Jackson as well about matters relating to racial reconciliation. Let me encourage you today to follow Tony Perkins today at T Perkins, at T Perkins for Facebook and Twitter. And it would be a joy for you to follow me at Ronnie Floyd for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Well, today, a revised immigrant travel pause goes into effect beginning March the 16th. President Trump signed a new executive order temporarily banning U.S. travel from six majority Muslim nations. With us now is Philip Holloway. He served as an officer and judge advocate in the United States Navy and former Georgia assistant district attorney and founder of the Holloway Law Group. It is a joy to welcome you, Philip, today to the Washington Watch.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, Mr. Holloway, as you know, the order suspends U.S. refugees program for 120 days. Iraq was removed from President Trump's original executive order, which was blocked by a federal judge in January. Syria, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Yemen remain on the list. Attorney General Jeff Sessions calls the executive order a proper use of the president's authority. He also referred to it as enhanced screening and vetting. Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly says the order will help make the United States safer. President Donald Trump's immigration executive order directs federal officials to set new immigration rules that will identify and exclude people who support the use of violence and also hints at the exclusion of people who embrace Orthodox Islam's violent extremism. Let me ask you, Mr. Holloway, do you think this executive order will stand up with the courts?
I do. I certainly think it should. If they wind up back in the Ninth Circuit, for example, all bets are off, because that being a court that is overturned, I think the rate is 80% of the time. That's the second worst in the nation, just behind the D.C. Circuit, I believe.
That's
winds
right
up out there, all bets are off. But if they're going to follow the law, they should have upheld the first one, and they certainly should uphold the second one, because the president seems to have gone out of his way to address their stated concerns, even though, in my opinion, those concerns were invalid.
Well, thank you for that insight, because I think you're correct, and it's so encouraging to know that the process has been deepened, pause was pushed, and trying to make it better to help the future of America in every way. Homeland Security Secretary Kelly stressed that nothing in the executive order affects current lawful permanent residents or those with existing authorization to enter America. It sounds like President Trump's administration is rolling out this executive order better than before. Is that what you see, Philip Holloway?
There's no question that the rollout was much smoother this time, and I think that can be credited to the fact that he now has more of his administration in place. He's got a Secretary of State. He's got his own Attorney General, not a holdover from the Obama administration who's just going to simply say, I refuse to enforce this in court. We're not even going to send lawyers. That Sally Yates, of course, was immediately fired for that. But here's the thing that I want everybody to understand, and this is key to the legal analysis. Under the United States Constitution, Congress has plenary, that means unbridled and beyond judicial review. They have plenary power over immigration, and through statute, they have delegated that plenary power to the president in this area. Federal law says that when the president finds that the entry of any aliens or any class of aliens would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation, suspend entry of all aliens or any class of aliens or immigrants or non-immigrants on terms as he seems and he deems fit to be appropriate. That is very, very broad, very sweeping power that the presidency has. It always has had. And it's worth noting that the Obama administration used that very power 19 times over 8 years in various executive orders, dealing with people trying to come here from all over the world, and in some instances even targeting individual persons. So to think that this is something new is just preposterous. It's only because it's Donald Trump and people who don't like him that this is even an issue.
Well, you know, I'm talking right now with Philip Holloway, and Philip, the interesting thing about it is that in this process, it shows again about what happens in our country when such political polarization goes on. It paralyzes the advancement of the nation. Would you agree with that?
I do. I do 100%, and there's no doubt that the nation is decidedly polarized on many different issues, and that would be an entire different conversation.
That's correct.
But it doesn't change the fact that the law is the law, and it is the same law that has applied for decades and decades and decades. You know, the president has been delegated this authority by Congress. All presidents have used it, at least in modern times, since this particular statute's been enacted, and the president, since George Washington, has universally been deemed to be sort of the chief person in charge of national security. You got to have somebody on point, and it's always been the president. So when you combine all this stuff together, you can only reach the conclusion that the president can do this. Now, you can have a debate about the wisdom of it. You can have a debate about whether or not it should have been these six countries or maybe add a few more to it, take some off the list, tweak it here, tweak it there. But that's a policy debate. It's not a legal debate. And there's no question, as a lawyer looking at this, that the president has this authority. He had it in January when he had the first order, and he's got it now. If they wind up in the Ninth Circuit that is, some people say, lawless, well, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, the rule of law needs to be abided by. Philip, the anti-extremist language in the new March 6 executive order is narrower and more legalistic than the pro-American language in the Judge Block January 27th executive order. Is that what you're seeing?
I do. I think it's the language has been tweaked to prevent some of the concerns that the three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit had. It really doesn't matter to me, quite frankly, how it's worded, as long as the net effect is the same, and I think it will be. They took out Iraq because Iraq has engaged in sufficient diplomacy with our new Secretary of State so that we're satisfied, at least on this end, apparently, that they are going to help on their end, and the order was not deemed necessary to include Iraq. Now, if we had some other nations on the other side of this order that might be willing to do the same, now, I don't think most of them even have the capacity to do any real screening and vetting and participation, but certainly it's a good sign, and it gives me some hope that Iraq is now at least involved in diplomatic negotiations that help the president narrow this order.
Well, thanks for talking about Iraq, because I was going to ask you that very question that you ended up answering before I ask it, because so many people will really talk about and wonder, now, why is Iraq removed? Is there anything else you'd like to say about that, Philip, now that we have just another minute or two to talk about that?
Well, especially with regard to Iraq, and there were these translators that had helped the military during the military conflict in Iraq that became sort of the poster children for why the left believed the initial order was morally wrong, and it was just not the right way of doing things. So that takes that issue completely off the table. It eliminates a large set of poster children for the left to point to, and I think in the end, this is going to be narrowly tailored, and it really is bulletproof. It may wind up at the Supreme Court. If it does, it will prevail there. They're going to go and find the most liberal judge they can find to start the process. But I think in the end, it'll stand up.
Good. Well, let me ask you this relating to your Republican friends who somewhat may have, a few of them may have decided they didn't like the initial rollout of this. Do you think that this new executive order will be helpful? Do you think they will come on board? Do you feel like they will believe that the concerns that many have had in their nation about it obviously have been answered in this new executive order?
Sure. When you have a new major policy shift like this one, you've got today we've seen the press was thoroughly briefed before the formal announcement. The Congress was briefed. You've got 10 days now for the federal agencies to get their act together. You won't have people in flight that get turned around at the airport. You're not going to have the chaos that you saw at the airport the first time around, and it really does reflect a White House that is now more up to speed on the best way and the proper way to get big policy things done.
Well, Philip Holloway, let me thank you again for being on the Washington Watch today, and in our final few seconds today, before we tell you goodbye, and we're going to introduce our next guest here in a minute, relating to what is coming on, I want you to be sure and stay tuned for Jennifer Breeden of the Clarion Project. We're going to be talking about the wiretapping issue at Trump Tower that was brought up this weekend. But in just a few seconds, Philip, could you say just one brief sentence or two why people should support this new travel ban?
People should support this new travel ban because it makes America safe much more so than it has in the past. It may not completely stop the water flowing over the dam, but it most certainly slows it down.
Thank you so much, Philip Holloway. I hope you'll be back in just a moment as we continue the Washington Watch.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetalpain. That is frc.org/fetalpain.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us the grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345, and our website is afafoundation.net.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. You know, God has allowed us to go all over the country to serve as 8 Days of Hope. We've been to Illinois, New York, Texas, North Carolina, pretty much from coast to coast. And it's so awesome to meet homeowners. They're just so encouraged. I mean, sometimes we rebuild their homes. Other times we put a tarp on the roof or do chainsaw work. We have never charged anybody anything for our services. Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others just as He loves us. If you're interested in being part of 8 Days of Hope, either with our rapid response team that goes anywhere in the country within 3 to 4 days of a disaster, or in our rebuilding efforts like we did last year in South Carolina, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, click Get Involved or Volunteer, and we will notify you anytime God calls us to go and serve those who suffer from disaster. 8daysofhope.com or on Facebook.
Over the weekend, President Donald Trump accused former President Obama for wiretapping his office at Trump Tower. The White House is calling for an investigation into wiretapping allegations. I'm Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins on the Washington Watch today. And right now, I'd like for us to welcome to this broadcast Jennifer Breeden, who is the legal analyst for the Clarion Project and human rights and foreign policy expert. Jennifer, welcome to the Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Ronnie. It's good to be here.
The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act Court, made up, known as FISA, made up of 11 federal judges serving 7-year terms and selected by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, meets in private, sometimes even in the middle of the night, and FISA targets are highly classified. The FISA court was authorized under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978, passed in the wake of Watergate and other intelligence abuses uncovered by the committee. It allows the government to eavesdrop on any foreign power or agent of a foreign power engaged in espionage or terrorism. Neither criminal nor foreign surveillance can be ordered by the White House. Comey asked the Justice Department to refute wiretap claims. The White House calls on Congress to investigate. Let me ask you this, Jennifer Breeden, who is the legal analyst for the Clarion Project. Let me ask you, what is the FISA warrant?
So basically, the FISA warrant, when wiretapping is initiated by the executive, by the Department of Justice, which is under the President of the United States, there are two ways that they can go about warranting that domestic intelligence. That's one is without a court order, without a real, like a real judicial court order. The other is with a court order that has probable cause. Without a court order means that the president can authorize through the attorney general, through the president's attorney general, they can authorize electronic surveillance for a period of 1 year, provided that it's only to acquire foreign intelligence information from a U.S. citizen directed at communications that were controlled by foreign powers. And all they have to do is get an order and under sealed confidential information from the FISA court, which isn't a public record. This is without a court order. And so that's exactly what this would be. The FISA court would then determine what is what is happening, the president, the executive, and the attorney general would give them information showing that a U.S. citizen has specific ties to a foreign intelligence agency or to a foreign agency, mm-hmm. and that that information that the president says they have, it could be crucial to prevent sabotage of the United States.
You know, some are saying that the key to President Trump's accusations are if any warrants were issued by the secret FISA court authorizing the surveillance. What can you say to that based off of what you know today?
Well, from what I know today, that could happen. Again, obviously, we don't know what's happened. You know, the president has said that President Trump has said now that he's going, that evidence will be coming out shortly. But in his current position, he now has access to some of the most top secret information. That includes FISA court holdings and hearings. And so even though the President Obama wouldn't have needed a court order or a public order mm-hmm. with probable cause that we would consider probable cause to surveil Trump Towers, if this is in fact true, President Trump would now have access to those sealed confidential records. And the reason he wouldn't have given that out is because those are confidential information that only he has access to. So it is likely that he might have had access to see that this was ordered by the Obama administration in 2016 or at some point for a period of 1 year, and that that information was being used. And they don't require the amount of probable cause without a court order. It doesn't require the amount of probable cause that a normal court would need. And so it's likely that President Obama might not have, or his attorney general might not have had enough evidence and just have said allegations based on Trump's relationship with the Russian government, and the FISA court might have allowed such electronic surveillance under the FISA laws.
You're listening to Jennifer Breeden on the Washington Watch with Ronnie Floyd sitting in for Tony Perkins today. And Jennifer, let me ask you this question, which is a basic question, but it's obviously a question that you have heard and others are asking continually. Isn't it a natural question to ask, where does this information come that the president might have access to? The common person out here really would, you know, they're just wondering, where does that information come from if indeed he doesn't know? And there's all kind of ways to answer that. But do you have any insight to that?
I do. And it's actually a very good question. And I actually cannot answer definitively, but I do know that as Trump's team begins to partner with and infiltrate, and infiltrate is the wrong word, but it's true, get into these sort of swamp DC party lines, which is where not only the FISA court, the Justice Department, you have a new attorney general here who is now getting access to all kinds of court documents, including Trump's cabinet, and they're getting into their roles. It's been a couple months now. And so as they're looking through this information over the past few years, because remember, when you get into a new office, you don't just start with a blank slate. You start with, in the United States of America, and a recent history, and they need to look through court decisions that have been laid down, things that involve terrorism. And the FISA laws, even though they were published in the wake of Watergate to deal with spying on domestic agencies, they were actually revised many times in the wake of the 9/11 attacks mm-hmm. to include terrorism. And so if Trump's people were looking into terrorism court decisions from the FISA courts, it's very likely they could have come across that. That's where he would have gotten this information. If somebody's saying, hey, look, we were looking over these recent terrorism surveillance acts to see what legal things you can do to help our national security, and we actually came across your name for something that's going on here. That's one possibility, but again, I mean, this will be coming out later, and so we'll have to see that.
Well, Jennifer, in our final few seconds with you, and we just have just a few seconds left in this part of our program, but isn't it important that Americans trust the FISA court?
It's absolutely important that Americans trust the FISA court. Again, they were revised. I mean, this is like with Attorney General John Ashcroft trying to protect the United States of America. So we have to trust the FISA court to surveil, but we also have to trust that it's in line with why FISA was actually passed, and that's to ban illegal domestic intelligence gathering from people that are just political opponents and activists.
Well, thank you, Jennifer Breeden. That was very insightful. Jennifer is with the Clarion Project. We look forward to having you again, Jennifer. But let me say, before we go to break today, coming up with me in a moment is the show host typically on this program, our own Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. He's going to be talking with me about the Senate hearings in Texas. that require transgender people to use bathrooms in public schools, government buildings, and public universities based on biological sex. Do not miss this next segment.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, a little bit of economic data coming out this week, but first off, factory orders are coming out. That's a pretty good leading indicator. That's going to be January factory orders. It's expected to be up about 1%. That's a little bit down from last look, which would have been December, 1.3%, but nonetheless good. Trade imbalance numbers coming out, and of course that's expected to increase to about $48.5 billion from $44.3 billion. Consumer credit is a number that I love to see. That's coming out on Tuesday. That also expected to rise. I hope it doesn't, but it is likely going to when we look globally at consumer credit throughout the top three economies in the Eurozone in particular. We have seen that number go up over the last couple of months, and I suspect it's going to be the same here. Last look, back in December, we had $14.2 billion. And some are expecting as much as $17 billion. I hope not. I hope we are feeling very good about the economy, as we should, our markets, the investments that we have, but not enough to get in debt. Import-export prices come out. Of course, the big number is non-farm payrolls coming out on Friday. You might remember I said this will be the look, I'm probably going to be wrong, that we could see labor participation actually getting into the 1980s. We'll have to see. Looks like I'm going to be wrong on it, but we'll see. Anyway, they're expecting about 185,000 jobs. That's not very many, but good things ahead, I'm sure. So that about wraps it up for the week, and we'll have to wait and see how the markets react this week. I expect they're going to be a little bit more muted this week than they were last.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Good afternoon. This is Ronnie Floyd sitting in for Tony Perkins today. A Senate hearing for the Texas Privacy Act is scheduled for tomorrow. The Longhorn State is taking measures to protect its citizens from laws that hinder common sense and public safety. When it comes to transgender persons being allowed to use both men's and women's restrooms. With us now, as our guest on his own show that I am guest hosting today, Tony Perkins. Welcome, Tony, to the show that is basically your show today. Thanks for calling in.
Well, Dr. Floyd, great to be with you. I just laughed about 250 of your fellow pastors in the shadow of the Capitol as they were preparing for tomorrow's hearing. So A lot of activity here in Austin, Texas.
Well, that sounds like an exciting environment. I tell you what, Tony, let's dive on in and let you tell our heroes today, our listeners today, what is at stake right now in Texas in this moment?
Well, first, let me just say thank you for filling in for me today so I could be down here in Texas for this hearing tomorrow and this pastor's conference that we're speaking at. But here's what's at stake here, Ronnie, is that this is not just about bathrooms. It's not about changing rooms. It's not about showers. This is about deconstructing society. I mean, think about it for a moment. If you can deny biology, if you can deny the anatomy of male and female, what's left that you cannot deny? And Texas is at a critical point. You know, North Carolina, they took this on. They succeeded in HB2, although they became a target. We're talking about that here in Texas because there's claims that they have torpedoed North Carolina's economy. Simply not true. They continue to do well economically because people know the moral climate there is a place you want to do business. It's a place you want to go. Texas could really put this issue to rest because once they pass Senate Bill 6, which basically says private entities can do whatever they want, they want to have a bathroom policy like Target and lose almost 50% of their value as a company, hey, go right ahead. But they're not going to be forced to do it by the state, and state facilities will not do that. They will not put children and others at risk because of a policy that is designed to placate, you know, about 0.05% of the population. So the votes appear to be there in the Senate tomorrow. There's a Senate hearing in the morning as the bill is introduced. They have not only Republican members sign on, but even today an announcement of a Democratic member, which appears to get it beyond the threshold of what it needs to succeed.
Well, that's really encouraging, Tony. When you look at this in relationship to what could happen in America just because one state finds a way and leads the way, talk about that today with our people. I mean, there's a lot at stake, even in the country, relating to what happens in Texas tomorrow.
You know, that's a really good point, is how when you are at the tip of the spear of something, and the lieutenant governor here, Dan Patrick, who's been on the show many times,
yes,
he's really stepped forward. And even despite the fact that people were, you know, criticizing North Carolina, attacking the governor there, the lieutenant governor, the lieutenant governor here stepped forward and said, you know what, this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to take this on. And that leadership is going to be felt, I think, across the nation, because people realize, just as Donald Trump has done as president, he stood up to the media, he stood up to the elitist, and we may not share the same values on everything, but what he has done is he has been willing to stand up and not be intimidated into silence. And I think that's what we are discovering across the country, that finally, you know, Christians are finding their voice, conservative politicians finding their voice. It's time to stand up and say, look, this is crazy. It defies common sense. It's dangerous. It's risky. We're not going to do it.
Tony, in relationship to the economy, which always seems to get into this debate some, many say that it will hurt the state's economy. Others say it discriminates against transgender people. I know that you've disputed both claims, I believe. Would you talk about that briefly here today?
Yeah, well, I'll take first the economic aspect of this. A report out just recently on North Carolina and their hotel room occupancy rates, they actually went up by, I think, 5.1%. They've seen an increase, not a decrease, despite all the boycotts. Despite the NCAA and the NFL and NBA and all these others, you know, saying we're taking the sporting events away from you, it's not hurt the state. The state still has businesses coming into the state, because part of it is the climate in which people want to live, a climate which is A, safe, B, but there's a strong moral component here as well. So it's not hurting the state. Maybe maybe they've seen some economic impact, but it's been minimal. So I think Texas is taking that head on. They're going to refute that. In terms of discriminating against transgenders, look, this is not, the concern here is not over transgenders being, you know, in bathrooms and abusing people or in showers. That's not the point here. It's those predators that would take advantage of an ill-conceived public policy that would open the door to people who want to, you know, to voyeurism, to assaults, which have been documented and have happened even in Target's own changing facilities. So the threat here is real. Texas is stepping forward and saying, look, this is a public policy safety issue, and we're going to take the lead on this.
Well, thank you, Tony, so much for your insights, and may God give favor in the state of Texas tomorrow. And thank you for your leadership across the country. Thanks for meeting with pastors there. And speaking of pastors, Tony, in just a moment, our next guest is going to be one of our common friends, Bishop Harry Jackson. He and I are going to be talking about how does a pastor, how does a minister, how does a church leader address the current political and cultural climate with church members as well as with the cities in which we live. Encourage people in 5 seconds, Tony, why they should listen.
Because Ronnie's got something to say. Listen to him. Take care of that microphone.
Hey, thank you, friend. You have a great day. We'll see you back in a moment on the Washington Watch.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. So what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
In just a moment, we're going to be talking with Bishop Harry Jackson on the Washington Watch. My name is Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and I've been sitting in quite a bit along the way for Tony. And many of you know me as a pastor and also as the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention, along with speaking in all kinds of evangelical settings across America and the world. But let me just encourage you that tomorrow we are beginning to release a podcast about life and leadership. All of us need to know more about life and more about how to be effective as leaders. And I'm going to be launching a podcast tomorrow. You can download it on iTunes. Just go to Ronnie Floyd on Life and Leadership, or you may be able to go to ronniefloyd.com and discover much more about it. It would be a joy for you to help share that with me and to share that experience with others across America and the world. We all need to learn about life and leadership. Well, speaking of life and leadership, we have today on the broadcast in this final segment one of the great leaders in America, Bishop Harry Jackson, who will be here in just a moment to talk with me about all kinds of challenges in our culture today. How do pastors, how do church leaders, how do church members navigate through these incredible times of upheaval in our nation? Politics, culture, racial matters, all kinds of things. Bishop Jackson and I have done some work together in regard to racial reconciliation. I love this man. He's a great man, great pastor in Maryland. And Bishop Jackson, thank you so much for being on the Washington Watch today.
Well, Pastor Ronnie, it is great to be with you again. And I share a mutual affection for you and with you. And I thank God for your courage. So let's jump into this topic. It sounds exciting.
Thank you, Bishop Jackson. I understand that you attended the 160th anniversary of the Supreme Court's landmark Dred Scott decision. Tell us about that.
Well, what was interesting was that the family of Roger Brooke Tawney, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who ruled that blacks were only three-fifths of a man in the Dred Scott case. And you'll remember that Dred Scott traveled with his owners as a slave into free territory. And then when he got there, he tried to sue his owners for his freedom. And they said he was an inferior class of being. He did not have the rights or the standing sue or to be anything but a slave or whatever rights the society of the day offered. So the Tawney family apologized to the great-great-granddaughter of Dred Scott. She was there, and they actually exchanged some wonderful sentiments.
Wow.
And I believe that God is in this season helping us understand that the church is the only group that can lead the way in this kind of healing. Both families are Christian today. Both families love God.
Yes.
And both families are dedicating their lives in very tangible ways to heal the racial divide and bring reconciliation for our country.
Well, I totally agree with you, Bishop Jackson. This past summer in 2016, I convened the and led the Southern Baptist Convention meeting that was in St. Louis, serving as president of that convention. And I, as you well know, have been involved in racial matters and trying to work together toward unity. We've taken all kinds of steps of that within our own denomination and even beyond. And many of us across denominations have worked on that, of which you've been a great part of that. But interestingly, you know, just minutes from where we met was the very place where the Dred Scott decision matter took place, and his museum is right downtown. I walked down there and went through that on Friday before I spoke on that Tuesday, and we kicked everything off. And in my president's address, that same person, I believe, one of his nieces, or I forget exactly who was the relative in the room that day, but a remarkable woman was there, and we recognized her in the middle of my message as I talked some about racial reconciliation there. It was a tremendous moment. I am convinced. I was in Fort Smith, Arkansas last night, Bishop Jackson, and I thought about you because I was asked to come to Fort Smith by a pastor, Devereaux, there, who convened the entire city of Fort Smith and the leaders of that city several months ago relating to racial unity in that city. And then this was their third or fourth meeting. He asked me to come down and speak at it. And it was a remarkable gathering in the St. James Missionary Baptist Church there in the city of Fort Smith. And so there were people last night, even in the state of Arkansas, even in the state of Fort Smith, black and white, who called out to God together. Those of Latino nature as well, or ethnicity, they all joined with us to call out to God to bring unity in America. Don't you believe, Bishop Jackson, that the Lord is really wanting to raise up the church today to see all of us reconciled to God first, which comes through salvation, but also reconcile brother with brother, which we can model that for our country?
Yeah. Well, I'm convinced you're right. In fact, Jesus told us that in the last days, nation, or in the Greek, it's really the word ethnos, would rise up against ethnos. So I don't believe that can possibly be solved outside of the church. In other words, we have the capacity to come together. We have to lead the way. And we then also, I believe, can do practical things to undo the damage that was done. And today at the event, they asked me to share some words with them, and I took them to 2 Samuel chapter 21, in which David was on the third year of famine in his land. He cried out to God, And the Lord revealed to him that God was allowing famine to blight his country because Saul had mistreated the Gibeonites, another ethnic group. And there was a requirement in the heart of God for justice in that relationship, even though David had nothing to do with it. He had the privilege of solving a problem that was heavy on heaven's heart. And I believe that's where we are today, Pastor Ronnie, is that we don't need to assign blame to every white or blame to the inner city people who are so angry today and say, it's all your fault, what's going on. We simply need to take up the call to be an answer, first spiritually, as you did last night, and then I believe God will give us creative insights wherein we can heal families, heal educational problems, we can move with criminal justice measures that will allow changed men to return to their families. There's a lot we can do, and I believe we're up to the task, sir.
Yes, well, I love your heart for this because I just think it's exactly where we need to be, Harry. This is Ronnie Floyd sitting in for Tony Perkins today on the Washington Watch, and I'm speaking with Harry Jackson, Bishop Harry Jackson, who is a pastor in the state of Maryland, really close to D.C., just minutes away. Pastor, let me ask you this question. I get asked this all the time. Pastors today, church leaders today, ministers of all walks of life. I mean, these are some challenging days. I mean, even what's happened within the last week in our country relating to so many issues that obviously many of them are related to matters in Washington, but even beyond. But how do you tell pastors to talk about the political and the social challenges of our day? How do you coach them? Today, imagine that you're speaking to some wonderful people. They go to church every week. Many of them are strong church leaders. Some are pastors, ministers of the gospel. How do they navigate and work through these things personally and as a church?
Well, Pastor Ronnie, I think you agree with me. We plan our preaching out for a year, and as part of the plan, you know, we're always going to have Easter sermons, Christmas sermons. We're always going to have sermons that deal with stewardship and evangelism. And a few weeks ago, I took some time to do a series on the names of God. And, you know, the self-revelation of God, Jehovah, Jireh, those kinds of things. And I brought up in the middle of just preaching through the Bible, names of God, one of the compound names of God, which is Jehovah Gamola. It's found in Jeremiah 51, verse 56 and 57, and it's the God or the Lord of recompense. And I talked there for a few minutes about how we can believe God for justice and to watch over us. He cares for the widows and the orphans, and how that people like Moses were identified with his own Jewish people because he believed that God was able to compensate him or give him a just reward for taking a righteous stand. And I was able to really talk about the race problem in America. I've got 25 nationalities in our church, and we were able to say one of the things we've got to learn to do as minorities is we must forgive, because forgiveness gives way to or gives an opportunity for the justice of God to supernaturally invade the land.
Very powerful.
I can't hate like the world and expect the blessing of God's rewards and God's justice. So a message like that, woven in, level by level, here a little, there a little, on the topics that we feel are important, I believe that there is a fundamental lack of understanding about the family in our urban communities, the role of a man. So my next series, and I'll close with this and let you respond. My next series is based on a book by Dr. A.R. Bernard out of New York City, great leader, and it is called Four Things Women Want. And we talk about the need in a family for men to have consistency, maturity, and several decisiveness, and several other things that are essential to having a strong marriage, strong leadership, strong home. And right now, I'm seeking to disciple my people by talking about foundational truths that can be applied to the big problems of our day.
That's very powerful, Bishop Jackson. Let me ask you to go back to that Jeremiah passage for a moment. You gave a scripture reference there. Would you give us that scripture one more time so our listeners might be able to write that down or try to remember that today? Jeremiah, where was it?
Yeah, chapter 51, and it is verse 56.
All right.
And it is...
Bishop Jackson, are you there?
I'm here. Did I lose you?
Yeah, you did, but you're in now. Go right ahead. Would you give it again? Jeremiah 51, 56, correct?
Yes. At the end of this passage, God's talking about Babylon here. It says, "For the Lord is a God of retribution. He will pay in full." And the idea is that what Babylon did to Israel is going to be paid back by God ultimately in a divine court of heaven. And as you trace that idea on through to Moses in Hebrews 11, how he suffered with the people of God, believing that God would give him recompense and reward, there's a powerful study in the Bible about how God will ultimately bring justice to those who go after it God's way. And I think this is the problem in our generation. Many people want things, even justice, but they're going after it sometimes like the world goes after things. Not as kingdom people should.
Well, operate. Thank you. Thank you so much, Bishop Jackson. You're a dear friend. Thanks for your work regarding not only just racial reconciliation, but being a Bible preacher and teacher, for calling the church to unity, to evangelism, calling America to awakening. You've been very faithful to do that, not only with me and others, but you've been faithful to do it yourself. May the Lord bless you, Bishop Jackson. Thanks again for being on the Washington Watch. And again today, this is Ronnie Floyd sitting in for Tony Perkins today. And he is away in Texas. Pray for him as he leads those leaders in Texas to really stand for righteousness tomorrow. The Lord bless you. Have a great day today.
It's a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.